I wrote this 2 years ago on Veterans Day, just hours before I got on a plane to fly back to Michigan to visit my parents. It's a story from World War II, and I wrote it in honor of veterans everywhere. It was January 13, 1945, in the Ardennes forests of Belgium. 29 days earlier, German forces under Field Marshal von Rundstedt had launched a full-scale attack aimed at Antwerp, the principal supply port of the Allied forces, beginning a last-ditch effort by Nazi Germany to avoid losing the war. The various confrontations resulting from this attack were labeled the Battle of the Bulge by American journalists during a Christmas press briefing when they saw the giant salient, or bulge, the Germans had created in the Allied lines. Much has been written about the fierce battles for Japanese-held islands in the Pacific and the incredible sea-to-land invasions of Sicily and Normandy, but the fact is the Battle of the Bulge was the bloodiest battle for American forces in World War II. There were 89,500 American casualties, including 19,000 killed and 23,000 missing. The Germans counted on surprise and Hitler's belief that the Americans wouldn't fight. He was wrong. Almost everywhere the Germans went, they were held up and sometimes stopped cold by outnumbered American forces, the most famous example being the defenders of Bastogne, where General McAuliffe, when asked to surrender, gave the Germans his famous one-word reply, "Nuts," which the Germans had a hell of a time interpreting. After a week of futility, the Germans finally gave up the notion of taking Bastogne. Just south of the Belgian town of Petite-Langlure, that day was a cold and slightly depressed 25-year-old American captain in the 83rd Infantry Division. His name was Harry. He was cold because the winter of 1945 was a vicious winter, one of the coldest in memory, and everybody was cold. It was so cold that oil would congeal in engines if they weren't kept running, and even rifles had to be maintained rigorously or they would freeze into uselessness. The cold was an equal opportunity source of misery. Before daybreak, Harry and a German-speaking man named Hans Trudel had scouted close enough to enemy lines to hear shovels hitting frozen ground and men speaking. After creeping away, Harry asked Hans what the Germans were saying. "Same thing American soldiers are saying," replied Hans. They're griping about the cold, the snow, and having to dig another hole." A couple of days earlier, Harry and his company had found some rare warmth in a small village to the south. Sleeping shoulder to shoulder in one of the houses, they were awakened in the middle of the night by knocking at the door. Standing outside was an entire family, including small children, shivering in the snow. They were the owners of the house, desperate to get out of the cold. Harry's first thought was to tell them, "No, get lost." Soldiers at war commandeer what they need, and the Belgian villagers knew this. But when he saw the small children, he ordered his men to find space for them somewhere. Scenes like that played out every day. One night, standing beside a road in a horizontal blizzard, feeling cold and miserable and sorry for himself, he watched as two ghostly figures appeared out of the snow walking down the road. It was an old man and a tiny boy. The old man was pushing a wheelbarrow while the boy, arms stretching upward, held on to one of the handles. They passed without a word, and Harry was struck by the lousiness of war that treated old men and little boys so harshly. Thoughts like these of the waste and devastation of war and thoughts of his own wife and baby son back home in Michigan were part of the reason for Harry's lingering depression. The other part of the reason was something that happened the day before in the village of Byhane. Harry and his driver, Jimmy Lynch, along with Sergeant Hughes, were reconnoitering forward of the company and took shelter in a roofless store during a firefight. That's when an artillery shell came through the opening above, killing Sergeant Hughes and severely wounding Jimmy. Harry was blown clear of the building, and after his senses returned, he found himself flat on his back, but miraculously unhurt. Soldiers at the front get superstitious when they experience repeated good luck, and he admits that he sometimes wondered how long his luck would last. Not much longer, it turned out. Harry thought of Jimmy as a kid brother, and by golly, Harry's instincts were well-honed when it came to kid brothers. He was the oldest of 9 boys. 5 of his kid brothers were in the military. One of them was already dead, and if he couldn't be there to protect them, he could damn well protect Jimmy Lynch lying on the ground bleeding right there in front of him. The Germans in Byhane were fighting fiercely and retaking the village they'd just lost. American soldiers were already falling back when the artillery shell hit, and Harry realized that he and the wounded Jimmy were now dangerously close to being overrun by the enemy. So he stepped into the street, drew his pistol, and threatened to shoot the next soldier who left his position. They weren't his men, but they listened and stayed put. The German advance was stopped. An officer with a pistol isn't much of an obstacle to soldiers with rifles, but maybe Harry reminded them of something. Or maybe they just figured anybody who could get blown out of a building and still be that ornery was somebody to reckon with. That was the first of three times he would pull his pistol and threaten fellow Americans in the next 24 hours. Sergeant Hughes and Jimmy were both original members of Harry's company, men he had trained with and shipped across the Atlantic with and come to view as friends, and it hit him hard when he left Jimmy at the aid station because he thought Jimmy was as dead as Hughes. Walking back to his company, he was met by another sergeant who informed him that two Germans wearing parts of American uniforms had been captured. Harry ordered them shot in compliance with orders from Supreme Command, but was informed that nobody would do it, so he walked over to do it himself. "How can I order others to do something I wouldn't do myself?" he thought, but when he saw that the Germans were just boys, one about 14 and the other about 17, he couldn't do it either. Honor is a strange thing, a fundamentally male concept, neither about morality nor about legality. It can be about responsibility, but not completely. It can be about pride, but not completely. Honor is nearly impossible to define. You just know it when you see it. Sophisticates of the modern world look down upon honor, contrasting cultures of honor with cultures of law, as though the two are incompatible, forgetting that their sophisticated legal systems are useless when the participants have no honor. When Harry pulled a gun on fellow Americans in Baiheen and refused to obey Supreme Command orders to kill captured Germans wearing American uniforms, he was navigating through the terrain of honor with the inevitable sense of direction that seems the particular virtue of soldiers of the United States of America. That night, the Americans and the Germans battled for Langlier and Petite Langlier, and twice Harry would pull his gun and threaten a truck driver to make him deliver needed supplies to his men. In the end, he would be hit and nearly killed by mortar fire as he guided that truck into Petite Langlier, but would get back on his feet and finish guiding the supplies to where they were needed before collapsing from loss of blood. Every time I hear about the exploits of Medal of Honor winners, I think to myself that Harry guiding those supplies into Petite Langlier on January 13th, 1945 ranks right up there with all of them. But then I'm kind of prejudiced because he's my father. Happy Veterans Day, Dad. I wish I could express better how I feel about you, but it's late and I need to catch a plane to Michigan early in the morning. All I know is this: your life is my definition of honor. See you in a few hours.